From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, we've got the latest installment of Health on the Margins. That's Radio Catskills' exclusive series that explores our region's fragile healthcare systems. Tonight, we focus on aging in the Catskills as Patricio Rubio talks with Lise Ann Duell of Sullivan County Office of the Aging. That's Health on the Margins. Coming up in the second half of the program, plus the CDC is reducing the number of recommended vaccines for children. Health officials warn the move could amplify confusion, could threaten child health. Tim Bruno talks with Dr. Eve Walter, Public Health Director for Ulster County. But first, we've got news from Albany, where New York State's legislative session started today. We've got audio from lawmakers, the Republican Assembly Minority Leader, and the Democratic Senate Majority Leader. But we start with Governor Hochul, as state officials are denouncing the Trump administration's freeze on child care funding. As WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports, it comes at a time when state lawmakers are pushing for more subsidies.
Governor Kathy Hochul says roughly $3 billion in funding for daycare and other programs is at stake. She says providers are paid for reimbursement, so they won't immediately feel the hit. The state is looking at a lawsuit. The Trump administration says it halted payments because of alleged fraud in Minnesota. Hochul says that's not fair.
There is no evidence of fraud here in the state of New York. In fact, this is just making kids political pawns again.
Hochul and other New York Democrats say they hope to expand state child care subsidies this year. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
A top state Republican says New Yorkers should be wary of socialism. Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay delivered the warning as state lawmakers kicked off their annual session in Albany today.
Socialism, wherever it has been tried, has promised fairness and has delivered scarcity. It has promised security and produced stagnation.
Republicans are vowing to push back on the agenda of New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani, a Democratic socialist. Mamdani wants the state to raise taxes to pay for universal child care and fare-free buses. GOP lawmakers are out of power in Albany, though. Democrats are in charge, and the Democrats are saying that expanding child care subsidies is crucial. Many Democratic lawmakers want to raise taxes on the rich to fund more social programs. They faulted President Trump for cuts to health care funding that were enacted last summer. A top state lawmaker is calling for more protections for immigrants as this year's session of the legislature got underway. During her opening remarks, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said Senate Democrats will continue their efforts to counter the Trump administration.
With one of our central focuses being standing up for communities that are being targeted and marginalized, which includes protecting our immigrant brothers and sisters by advancing goals set forth in New York for All.
The New York for All Act is legislation that would prohibit the use of state and local resources for immigration enforcement purposes. It has been stalled in the legislature over the past few years. And thank you to the New York Public News Network for those reports. Now that the legislature is up and running again in Albany, we're going to have lots more to talk about from the Capitol. One programming note along those lines, Governor Hochul will make her State of the State address on Tuesday. That's this coming Tuesday. We'll be bringing it to you live here on Radio Catskill. It happens at 1 p.m. that afternoon, with analysis to follow on the local edition that evening. Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, is reducing the number of recommended vaccines for children. Health officials warn the move could cause confusion, amplify mistrust, and threaten the health of children and families. Tim Bruno spoke with Dr. Eve Walter, Public Health Director for Ulster County.
Basically, the CDC has come out with revised guidance for childhood immunizations, primarily reducing the number of vaccines. I think there are some things related to scheduling. That their language of explanation related to aligning more with other developed countries' vaccine schedules. So as a result, several of what were typically in the list of vaccines that were recommended and provided for babies and children were eliminated as such as RSV, influenza, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, several others, with the caveats of it being applied only with guidance or conversations between parents and doctors.
Many parents depend on clear guidance for their children's health. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of confusion here. What are some concerns you might have, or are you already hearing from folks and families about this and confusion they might have?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this will create and add to a lot of confusion and also just feed into potentially just questions of trust of the healthcare system. While there are messages that we're in departments of health making clear that we're in high season for RSV and influenza, all of these diseases are ones that we're quite concerned about, especially young children who are the most vulnerable. I mean, the highest and lowest end of the age spectrum are our most vulnerable population. So our newborns, infants, and our senior citizens. And so it's going to be challenging because I think it suggests that these are potentially harmful, which is inaccurate. And if that's not ever stated in the revised guidelines, like because they're unharmful, but of course, why else in the mind of your average person, why wouldn't they think that it's because there's a concern? So I think it feeds into that, even though these have been in existence for a very long time and have been proven to be extremely safe and extremely important in reducing hospitalizations and deaths. So I think that's going to be a problem. It'll impact sort of the capacity for schools and camps. If the requirements of full immunizations change, it can impact how they operate. These schools and camps are particularly potentially breeding grounds for infections because these are where all children congregate, so which is why it's all the more important that, you know, children are immunized before going there. We are already seeing high rates of RSV and influenza and COVID. Influenza right now, those rates have been higher this year in hospitalizations than we've ever had before. And again, the youngest people are most vulnerable. I'll say we have we offer a clinic once a week for immunizations for families that are uninsured or underinsured. And this week, for the first time that I'm aware of, we had so many requests that we had to expand our clinic hours because people are very nervous, mostly influenza, but we also have a few from meningococcal immunizations. So, you know, people are feeling worried about what's out there, and then they're getting this message, and I think it's really problematic. I think what's also problematic is these other countries, Denmark is tiny compared to the United States. It has universal health care. So they have an easier time doing screenings. They have an easier time doing follow-ups. The parents are taking their kids more regularly to get the care. There's more touches when you have universal health care. Sometimes here in the United States, especially among individuals who are the most vulnerable, lowest income, struggling in other ways, homeless or housing insecure, sometimes at birth or in the first few months is healthcare's only opportunity to have access to these kids to make sure that they get the treatment they have. So it's an apples to oranges comparison to take a place like United States that does not have universal healthcare to a place as small as somewhere like Denmark that does. Our whole system is very, very different here. And we already have people falling through the cracks. You know, there's the interesting thing is, like, if you take Hep B, for example, the idea is that, well, if the mother tests negative for it, then maybe it's fine. But research has shown that a lot of these women have not gotten tested. There's false negatives. And so, you know, this is putting everybody at risk in larger public health. It's not even just putting the babies at risk, but a child can be asymptomatic for Hep A, and then they're in their home, and grandma or grandpa come, and it's spread to them. And so it's just a larger public health problem, and it's unfair to make a comparison with these countries that are much smaller and have universal health care.
Some vaccines, you mentioned flu, there are other vaccines that are no longer recommended universally, but under shared decision-making with clinicians. Do you think that's going to impact community vaccination rates or herd immunity for diseases like flu or even measles or pertussis or others?
Yeah, I mean, we already see it, right? I mean, we already see like fear and distrust of immunizations that are getting into social media and otherwise that are reducing. People are not getting immunized the way, you know, we need them to.
This change was sort of immediate without a lot of input from experts in infectious diseases or other public health experts. And being the public health director in Ulster County, I imagine you're still absorbing the news. But how do you communicate to parents and community members about what's going on and how they can feel informed and confident in their decisions around vaccination?
Yeah. So this is new to all of us because a uniform messaging is so important. Fortunately, local health departments like mine have the partnership with the State Department of Health. They are amazing up there. I honestly can say we don't know yet what this all means. We don't even know if this will stand. We don't even know if there'll be enough backlash that this turns around. You know, sometimes these are such big new pieces of news. I mean, we've been getting this regularly. You get this massive, like, oh my God. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it turns around. Mm-hmm. I don't know what will happen. I don't know if it'll impact school and camp requirements. I don't know what New York State will do yet. So at this point, you know, we're available. We have our phone number for parents to call any Department of Health. I'll just say, because you have a wider than my county reach, perhaps, that Department of Health, we all have nurses who are specialists in immunizations that anyone who's listening who just is confused or has any questions can always call their local Department of Health. We do offer free immunizations for anyone who's uninsured or underinsured. And, you know, at this point, I think that, you know, we're encouraging people to trust the established system that has gone through peer review. And, you know, there's been a lot of effort and energy and research into the established criteria and guidelines we have right now, a lot. And then it's been field tested. Not only has a lot gone into deciding, but then it has been field tested, both in research but in real life, because these immunizations have been a part of the spectrum of what's been delivered. So we know what's, you know, their safety. So, you know, I would ask people to sort of hang tight, and we're doing our best to sort of figure out what are the implications and what we need to do to help support our community as this happens. I think we got to avoid being hyper reactive to these kinds of very dramatic, unfounded and assessed by peers and you know, unreviewed kinds of decisions. We have to be very careful with them, and not just immediately react, but also, you know, see what these implications are going to be, so that we can make sure that we keep our community safe.
Before we go, I just wanted to ask you, what's the one message you want folks to hear about vaccines and child health in light of this surprising federal decision?
Right. So the immunizations that we have in place for children and newborns, children, adults, everyone, have absolutely been tested. They are safe. They are effective. They reduce hospitalizations. They reduce deaths. They are very, very important to the well-being of our entire community, especially those who are most vulnerable, which are our infants and babies, as well as our seniors. If anyone is finding themselves confused, lost, needing more guidance, please reach out to your local health department. Talk to one of the nurses there, and they will be happy to answer your questions, hear your concerns, and you know, the motto that we have here in Ulster County Department of Health is we're all in this together. So, you know, just know that you have a partner in your local health department.
That's Dr. Eve Walter, Ulster County Public Health Director. We've been talking about the recent federal decision to overhaul the childhood vaccine schedule and its impacts on children, parents, and the community. Dr. Walter, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. We're going to stay on the topic of healthcare now and stay local with the latest monthly episode of Health on the Margins, Radio Catskill's series on rural healthcare. Tonight, Patricio Rubio tackles the topic of aging in the Catskills.
Winter in the Catskills can be cold, and it can be hard. Long distances, icy roads, and limited services make everyday tasks more difficult, especially for older adults. In the colder months, getting to the grocery store, the doctor, or even just leaving the house can become a real challenge. But aging doesn't always arrive all at once. Sometimes it starts with a missed bill, a forgotten appointment, a check that never makes it to the mailbox. And for families, especially working families, the question becomes, what help actually exists? And how do you access it before things reach a crisis point? From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Health on the Margins. A series examining healthcare deserts in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. As hospitals consolidate, providers disappear, and distances grow longer, rural residents are often left navigating fragile systems with very little margin for error. I'm Patricio Roballo. For me, this topic is personal. Over the last few years, I've been helping care for my father as his memory declined. At first, it wasn't dramatic. He started to forget to pay bills, then came missed taxes. Checks would go missing or get written and never be sent. Things that used to be automatic suddenly required constant follow-up, and then his mobility declined. When my father lost the ability to walk safely and eventually the ability to drive, everything became harder all at once. Getting to appointments, picking up prescriptions, even handling basic errands turned to logistical puzzles that had to be solved around workdays, distance, and availability. Like many families, we found ourselves in a gray area, not qualifying for Medicaid, but unable to afford consistent private care. That's when I started to learn more about the Sullivan County Office for the Aging. Lisanne Duell, the director for the Sullivan County Office for the Aging, I asked her to start explaining what the office is really designed to do.
We provide a variety of services to reach the mission of keeping people home in the community engaged and safe as long as possible.
That mission plays out through a wide range of services, many of which people don't know exist until they are overwhelmed.
So we are helping people from everything from finding a most affordable Medicare supplemental plan to delivering home-delivered meals to folks who can't get out, having congregate sites for social interaction, referring people to home care services, also including our home care program, which is called ICEP, which stands for Expanded In-Home Services for Elderly Program. It is a means testing program, but for individuals who are not on or eligible for Medicaid. We help people with entitlements like Medicaid and HEAP and the SNAP program for food affordability. We have our Sullivan New York Connects, which is basically one-stop shopping and point of entry for any services from cradle to grave for long-term supports.
And this isn't a small or distant issue. According to the Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress, the Hudson Valley's population is aging rapidly. The share of residents of ages 65 and older is projected to grow from about 14% in 2010 to nearly 19% by 2040. Even more striking, I think, the number of people age 80 and older is expected to grow by more than 50% over that same period, even as the overall population growth in the region remains relatively modest. In some counties, the shift is even sharper. Places like Orange and Columbia counties are seeing dramatic growth in their oldest populations, even where total population might be flat or declining. All of that means that more people are aging in place and more families facing these questions sooner than they might expect.
We are serving approximately 150 people daily with a hot meal delivered to their door, which is not just the meal, but that wellness visit to ensure that people are home safely.
Transportation is also another lifeline and one of the biggest challenges for aging residents.
I think we can all agree that driving is one of the biggest dignity and accessibility tools that we have throughout our lifetime. And if you don't have that ability, or you never did and you've always relied on loved ones who may not always be available, that's a huge barrier to receiving ongoing medical care. So the fact that we're able to provide medical transportation to individuals to get to their regular scheduled appointments is very vital for somebody to be managing chronic illnesses like diabetes or heart conditions. Even the podiatrist, that's a big part of keeping people home safely and getting them to their regularly scheduled and their important medical appointments. We even have individuals that use our transportation for life-sustaining treatments like dialysis and chemotherapy. We are always trying to look to ways to improve that and accommodate every ride that's requested.
Dual says affordability has become an increasing concern, especially since the pandemic.
I started here almost 7 years ago, so I've seen what happened during COVID and the food security initiatives that have taken, you know, we've taken a part of with other community organizations, and how that, you know, very substantially affects our older population, the cost of living, and how it affects people's ability to stay in the community. So people are, you know, tightening their belts more so and more so. And we're doing our best to connect people with everything that they are eligible for. So we do a lot of support for eligibility and entitlement programs to assist people with that.
The Office for the Aging also works part of a broader food security network.
We are part of the Food Security Coalition that's here in Sullivan County. We help facilitate a biweekly food distribution to the food pantries around the county through our Division of Community Resources with the Food Bank of the Hudson Valley. And part of that that distribution, if there's items that can go to our homebound or our congregate sites, we absolutely add that to the home delivered meal program, so people can sometimes get the fresh produce or other sometimes shelf stable items that are part of that distribution. We definitely see more people coming to us as their first call when they're experiencing food security situations.
Home care is where many families feel stuck, especially for those who don't qualify for Medicaid but can't afford private care. Dual says keeping people at home isn't just better for a quality of life, it's far less expensive.
Somebody with our ISIP program can be kept home safely with our program for an average of about $6,500 a year. And if they were in a nursing home, that cost would be about $122,000. So the math is mathing right there as far as what is making sense and where people want to age. We can complete a comprehensive assessment, and we can place an aide in there a few hours a week for task-oriented duties, not custodial, not companionship, but things like bathing, dressing, hygiene, laundry, light housekeeping errands. We also maintain a service we provide, but we are not vouching for the people on our private homemaker list, which we update very frequently with individuals who are looking to do this privately that you can connect with. We also have contract agencies that we provide the information for if people are able to pay privately. We link people up if they are eligible for veteran services. We work closely with our division mate, the Veteran Service Agency, for individuals eligible for services through that service and get them home care that way. And of course, if people are eligible or need to get assistance becoming eligible for Medicaid, we help facilitate that as well to get home care services. So there's a variety of ways that we can get people home care. But that being said, there is still a pretty bad home care crisis of individuals willing to do the work of this vital role. And it really stems down to paying a livable wage. So one of the things we've done as we have local authority through our ISEP program is we've contracted with the agencies for a higher rate with a guaranteed minimum rate for the aid that's a bit above what they would get doing private cases through the agency or through Medicaid. And that's helped us cover the cases that we have with our ISEP program. It's not fixed the problem entirely, but it's definitely helped. There's ways that we connect people with it when they're eligible for programs that help assist pay for it. We are absolutely the go-to place for that. And that's a big part of keeping people home safely and keeps people out of nursing homes.
Even when help exists, not everyone wants it.
People are self-directing and they are self-determining. So it's kind of hard sometimes to watch people make some really bad decisions or not the most healthy decisions, but we just keep reminding them we're here and remind them of what we're able to do. And things like this of us talking to you about what we offer hopefully sparks the interest in somebody to reach out to somebody that might not know about us, and we'll keep on trying to do what we do.
Caregivers also need support.
The Caregiver Resource Center, which we contract with Cornell Cooperative Extension to provide here in Sullivan County, has support groups. And the Caregiver Cafe, for example, that meets. And all of these resources are available on our website. There's links right to the schedule and everything. We also usually include that in our monthly newsletter, the Monthly Hoot, which people can access, again, through our website, or we can mail to them. We have it direct mailed to almost 1,000 people now and over 3,000 paper copies distributed throughout the county every month. And there's also, again, if people prefer to be anonymous or online, there's resources through the New York State Office for the Aging that people can access about caregiver support. And obviously there's a lot of online supports for caregivers, from support groups to tools and things like that.
Stu also stresses the importance of planning ahead. This is something my family had to confront directly as my father got worse. Once the bills, taxes, and the checks started to slip, once he lost the ability to walk and drive, planning stopped becoming optional.
We are contracted with Rural Law Center of New York to provide simple wills and simple estate plans and advance directives. We keep healthcare proxy forms here for people to fill out.
And for us, for our family, having legal paperwork in place wasn't about control. It was about having protection for my father, about making sure I could help him safely, legally, and without constant emergency decisions. And I know we're not alone in that.
It is important that people have, at minimum, power of attorney or living wills and healthcare proxies, so that if they can't make decisions for themselves, they are indicating which person they would want to make those decisions.
If there is one takeaway from this episode, is this: don't wait for a crisis. If you're worried about a parent, neighbor, even your future self, reaching out early can mean the difference between staying safely at home and losing that option entirely. For Sullivan County residents, the first call can be to the Sullivan County Office for the Aging or New York Connects, or your local Office for the Aging in your area. Take care of yourself. I'm Patricio Rubio, and this is Health on the Margins from Radio Catskill.
Thanks so much to Patricio Rubio for that report. This and all of the episodes of Health on the Margins are up now at WJFFradio.org. And that's it for me tonight. I'm Jason Dole. It's the end of the local edition, but I'll be back again tomorrow night and we'll do it all over again. We'll check in with the Times Union. For now, we've got more news on the way from the Daily. This is